All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, June 1st, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in on Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on a weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions. We also have Bible studies every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here in the Start Meeting Room. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, consider taking our 90-hour court access and the common law course. You can find that link on our front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, I guess the song, I didn't have the sharing button clicked, so we only had a piece of that song at the end. Anyway, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to be reading in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8. Let me get over to that. Okay, Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 8. In those days, the multitude being very great, and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples unto him, and saith unto them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now been with me 3 days, and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away fasting to their own houses, they will faint by the way, for divers of them came from far. And his disciples answered him, From whence can a man satisfy these men with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked them, How many loaves have ye? And they said, 7. And he commanded the people to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and gave thanks, and brake, and gave to his disciples to set before them, and they did set them before the people. And they had a few small fishes. And he blessed, and commanded to set them also before them. So they did eat, and were filled. And they took up of the broken meat that was left 7 baskets. And they that had eaten were about 4,000. And he sent them away. And straightway he entered into a ship with his disciples, and came into the parts of Dalmanutha. And the Pharisees came forth and began to question with him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit, and saith, Why doth this generation seek after a sign? Verily I say unto you, there shall no sign be given unto this generation. And he left them, and entering into the ship again, departed to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, neither had they in the ship with them more than 1 loaf. And he charged them, saying, Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, and of the leaven of Herod. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, It is because we have no bread. And when Jesus knew it, he saith unto them, Why reason ye because ye have no bread? Perceive ye not yet, neither understand? Have ye your heart yet hardened? Having eyes, see ye not, and having ears, hear ye not, and do ye not remember? When I break the 5 loaves among 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? They say unto him, 12. And when the 7 among 4,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? And they said, 7. And he said unto them, How is it that ye do not understand? And he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes, and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. After that he put his hands again upon his eyes, and made him look up. And he was restored, and saw every man clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, Neither go into the town, nor tell it to any in the town. And Jesus went out, and his disciples, into the towns of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, Whom do men say that I am? And they answered, John the Baptist, but some say Elias, and others one of the prophets. And he saith unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Peter answereth and saith unto him, Thou art the Christ. And he charged them that they should tell no man of him. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, and be rejected of the elders, and of the chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. And he spake that saying openly, and Peter took him and began to rebuke him. But when he had turned about and looked on his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of men. And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man, if he shall gain the whole world, and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels.
Okay, by the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an Apple browser, there should be a button there somewhere. Jen, how many questions do we have tonight?
We have one and a statement.
Okay.
You ready for a question?
Yep. Is that the one we were talking about a little bit before?
I was going to save that for number two, since there is no question in it.
All right.
You mentioned you sent the IRS two forms and tell them to complete them as a means to stop their attacks. One forced them to certify, sign under oath the information was true. I can't remember what those forms were. Please give that information again.
Okay, yeah, it was Form 56. And let me think about the other one. Let's see, Form 56. I'll get the other form in a minute. I've got a blank on that one right now. But there are two forms, and I don't try to tell them anything. Basically, what I do, it depends on the situation. I mean, if you're working for someone and they're taking money out on you, then they're reporting on you, and that's what they're going by, and that's problematic. If you're working for yourself and you're not reporting on yourself, and then they try to come out after you, well, the only way that they can try to figure out any numbers on you is to actually look into your bank account. I know that I had a situation one time, and that's what they did. They looked into my bank account and said, well, whatever was in the bank account for the whole year, they said that was my taxes that I didn't pay. So I had known what they've done, and of course they couldn't bring that up. And I mean, what is that, 100% tax? As a matter of fact, I know there was something going on recently with trying to someone hit someone with 100% tax, I think, when the money's coming to the people on the January 6th situation. And that, I'm sure that'll go into the courts. But the thing on that is, if you're working for yourself and no one's reporting on you and they're just making up numbers and they're coming out after you, there's nothing that they can do. They will intimidate you. They will send some forms to you. If you look down on the forms, you'll see there's a little number. I think it's down on the right side. Could be up on the top, but I think it's down on the right side, if I recall. And you'll see a series of forms. I mean, I've got lots of papers from the IRS over the years, and, you know, generally different forms, but, you know, they won't maybe communicate with me for a long time, and then they'll send a form out, and that'll be a repeated form, and so on and so forth. But what they're trying to do is getting you to acquiesce. By not responding, you're agreeing, and that will be their case against you if they pull you to court. Of course, again, if no one's reported on you and they're just making these numbers up, maybe looking into your bank account because they have that ability to do that. And that's an intimidation also, by the way, the fact that you know that they're looking into your bank account, and that's against the law. My response has always been to them, that I don't argue about taxes, and you know, if they say I owe taxes, well, you know, produce the paperwork, and it's, I think it's a Form 56 or a form, goodness, I can't think of the second
4490
one.
Maybe
4490, that's it. One of them is fiduciary authority and the other one is proof of claim. So thanks, Eric. Yeah, so those are the two forms. If you go in and you Google them, or whatever they use these days, do your search engine, just put Form 4490, Form 56, and you'll pull them up. And what I do, again, I write them a letter and tell them I'm not aware that I owe any taxes. If I owe any taxes, I'll definitely pay for them, but you're going to have to help me because I don't know what you're talking about. Send me the proof of claim, which is, again, I think it's the 56 that's the proof of claim, and then I could respond to that. But they never answer that. You do get an answer, goodness sake, they like to take 60 days, maybe even 90, after you send them something in answering their paperwork. And then they'll send you another paper telling you that they're asking for more time to look into this, and you know, we'll get back to you in a couple of months. And then they just disappear. But they've been doing that to me for over 20 years. Every couple of years, every two or so years, they just send me these things and tell me how much money I owe them, and I always do the same thing. And when I do send a paper, you must answer. Anytime they send you a paper, you got to answer them. Otherwise, they'll get you for acquiescing. But I always answer with an affidavit. So my letter become, I make it, put it into an affidavit form. You know, I sign at the bottom as a sworn statement and get it notarized. And I always send it in certified mail, getting a signature. And this way they can't say that you didn't respond to that. Now, let me go back another way, though. Again, if you are working for somebody and they're reporting on you, that's a problem. I know a lot of people who've gone into the courts to fight these people, and every one of them loses all the time. Even though they're wrong, and there's a lot of positions you could take. First of all, the court that they take you into is not a court of record. It's not really a federal court. It's a tax court held in the federal building, and, you know, a federal court building. And so they have the appearance, it's a facade of a court, and they claim it to be a court of record, but of course it's not a court of record. But again, everybody I know that's gone into that court to make that battle, they lose. But if, again, let me just state this one more time, if no one is reporting on you and they're just trying to capture you and get money out of you, then, you know, they have no proof of claim on you, and they can't do anything. And they can't take you into court without a proof of claim. And that proof of claim is a sworn statement, you know. You know, I could think of a lot of positions. I know in the beginning when I was battling the IRS, I had a lot of different positions and thoughts. But again, they ignore them all. Doesn't matter how righteous your positions are, how strong it is. They just ignore it. They don't care. So, anyway, if that person is here and they want to talk some more about it, they can get into the queue. Okay, let me just take a quick look before we take the next question. Hang on a second. Okay, we do have one person in the queue right now. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? It's *6-1 if you're on a phone, and should be a button if you're on Apple browser. Okay, that second question, I know they're having a problem with, Jan.
Yes, do you want me to read through it? There are no questions in it. It's just a group of statements about deprivation of rights by code enforcement.
How long is it?
Oh, about a page.
Right. Well, you know, these are, what's he quoting, Supreme Court rulings or codes or what's he quoting?
No. Well, let me start reading it, and you can stop me at any point. This is submitted by a non-member, by the way. Okay, starts out, having not been provided a valid contract of compelled performance and property requesting several times via certified mailing. Code surveils, searching property, from public areas with not only electronic devices, cell phones, but zooming in to find possible violations, claiming someone complained about property but refusing to provide their identification, using that complaint to initiate an investigation to find violations and charge fines by a magistrate, forcing compliance to register and state.
Jan, hold on a second. You mentioned, I missed something there. There's a complaint that's been made. Does he expound on that complaint, what he's talking about with that?
Well, the complaint was to initiate an investigation to find violations. There weren't any violations with the complaint, apparently.
Well, who does he say who initiated that?
No.
IRS?
It's just a complainer somewhere, a neighbor or a person who drive by or whatever. He never says what the complaints are about either. So.
But this is not a tax situation, IRS, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's like stuff on your property, the way it sounds.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Continue. We'll see if we can figure something out on this.
Okay. And then using that complaint to initiate an investigation to find violations and charge fines via magistrate, forcing compliance to register and state inspection automobiles on private property, making claims, again, anonymous, regarding possible safety concerns on the property that is posted private, no trespassing. So it sounds like this is things that he has on his property and people are complaining and so on. Then making claims to local magistrate that in turn accepts the controversy without a verified claim or affidavit of probable cause. Magistrate sends documentation stating you must plead guilty or not guilty, or a quality claim, or excuse me, a guilty claim will be entered previous to any hearing and must make a payment to ensure your appearance in court. The claims are always Commonwealth of Pennsylvania versus name, but never proper Christian name. The state is the injured party. Code enforcement of the state brings the claim, and the judge works for the state, decides the fines. I've been to the Jennerstown Municipal Town Council meetings, and they contacted with code enforcement and also made payments to the magistrate. And that's the end of it.
Okay. All right. Well, again, I understand. You made the point that it has something to do with his property and something with automobiles, I heard. And I presume that they're uninspected or they're not plated, but they're on his property and they're complaining. And I've heard about that before. First of all, what I would do to, you know, get rid of that is buy an automobile cover and throw it over there, or a top over the vehicle if it's unregistered or whatever the case may be. And, you know, I should imagine that should deal with that problem. But it sounds like they just want to come out after you because they like to put the violations onto you. They need to make money. That's why they do tickets. I mean, you know, and you're in a court that probably in a traffic court. What they like to do that, and at the same time they do traffic court, they'll do those kind of violations. What you can do is challenge the jurisdiction and see where that goes. I don't know how much experience that person has, if they understand how they can do that, and you know, and what the argument would be, and what you should say and what you shouldn't say, and then you know, you can always move it to a higher court for denial of due process, so you reverse the situation and you sue them for a denial of due process. You can take that directly into the federal court, which is the way I usually have done it, but you know, you can go into the state court, and then from the state court they're going to do the same thing. They're going to try to put it back or maybe try to rule on it. You see, they could have some kind of, they could claim some kind of a that they have jurisdiction, some kind of a jurisdiction over you on that, because it's a state court. The federal court can't, because the federal court can only listen violations, right violations. So, you know, if there's no violation of right, you know, they're not going to take the case. And if you discuss the case, they're going to throw the case out. So anyway, you can move it to federal court. We do have information on that. You can find that under Education Starts Here. I don't know if they're here looking at the desktop, but come down to, Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then you come over to Court Forms and Process, which I'm on that page right now. And if you come down a little bit, you'll see how to challenge jurisdiction. And that's where you first start, because they're going to default on that jurisdictional challenge. You got to make sure that you send a copy to the prosecutor, okay, and, of course, file one with the court. And, of course, you need your own copy. It needs to be verified, so it has to be under sworn statement. And you make the case. I've written this up already. You can kind of just make some changes on your own if you want. This is instructions for traffic court. Let's see what we have here. Forms challenge jurisdiction right here. So you go through the process. It's a show cause of jurisdiction. You make sure you got to do a notice of motion. You want to do a file on demand with it, an affidavit of service, just like you were doing anything else. And basically what you're doing, you're challenging jurisdiction. You're going to go into court, and the judge is going to say he didn't get the paper. What are you talking about? So you have to have an extra copy with you and, you know, ask the bailiff if they can give the copy to the judge. And by the way, the prosecutor has a copy because you copied the prosecutor. Okay, and that's the key thing. And the denial comes when they don't challenge it. Okay, they acquiesce because they don't challenge your affidavit. And what will happen is the judge is just going to say, I made the decision, I have jurisdiction. And, you know, you got to be careful. You want to be nice and polite and say, well, you know, I filed the paper here and I laid out my position. And nobody challenged my position. The prosecutor acquiesced. So what's before the court is my paperwork, and you have to rule on what's before the court. And you should be ruling for me, not the other side. But they're going to rule for themselves. And then you got to move it to federal court for cause and sue them for denial of due process. And that's the second part of this thing. And right after that, you'll see instructions and forms to move your case for cause to the federal court. And that's the way I've handled it. I have won more cases in the traffic court particularly by just challenging jurisdiction. And usually I never hear back from them again, because it's all paperwork in the mail. And sometimes, of course, I have to go in and then, you know, I usually end up at that point paying the fine. Or I can file into federal court. I've done that before also. But again, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win in a federal court. But you will. They will throw the case out immediately if you bring up anything in the case other than that you're bringing the case in there for a denial of due process. They don't need to know what the case is about. They don't need to know whether it's a traffic case or it's some kind of a violation that they're giving you on your property or any of those things. They don't need to know any of that. Matter of fact, that the other side, which is usually brain dead and they don't understand, kind of crazy to think about this, but more often than not, the other side doesn't understand that federal courts work. Most of these lawyers are familiar, of course, with the state courts and the local courts. And those particular lawyers don't know so much about the federal court and the jurisdictions. I don't think they really teach much on that situation in their bar schools. But in any event, I've been in there a couple of times with the other side, and they were bringing things up, and the judge would really get down on their case about this, you know, that you know, these are things that's outside the jurisdiction of the court, so on and so forth. They should know better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But chances of winning is pretty difficult. You can try and see once and again, do you want to sue for money? You know, denial of due process is worth, I was suing for $1,000 with real money, So that would be, and I defined real money as Morgan silver dollar coins. But silver prices have gone up so high, you might want to lower that to $500. And if you want to go that far. But you can win on a challenge of jurisdiction. I have won quite often on just a challenge of jurisdiction. I just never heard back from the courts again. I do have one that I battled for 2 years. This guy kept going back and forth. This judge just did not want to let this case go. And I had a situation, and I ended up having to pay, I think it was a $300 fine he hit me with, and I ended up having to pay that. And I do intend, I just haven't had the time, and so many other things are going on. I know things are going to be changing in the court soon. I do believe that, hopefully for the better, the way we're thinking, getting the common law back into the courts. But definitely with the courts, court systems are going to change. And I decided I'm waiting a little while longer before I move it into federal court. I'll have a better chance of winning. And I'm going to sue these people, both the prosecutor and the judge, and just take it from there. So it depends on what you want to do. But if they do hit you up and with a fine, and they just ignore, because that's what they did. I battled these people for 2 years, and then eventually they just went out and put a fine on me. And then they threatened and said that if I don't pay the fine, they're going to put me in jail. So I had to pay the fine. You know, what are you going to do? $300 or jail? It was kind of a no-brainer for me. But I am going to sue him. Anyway, that's all I can help on that. We do cover this in our course. If you go up to Education Starts Here and click on Court Access in the Common Law course, and you can take this course. It covers a lot of stuff, really, on court access, how to file your papers, all the forms and different things that you need to know, how the court system works, how it's structured. And we cover a lot of information on this. We do give the first, first 3 hours for free, so you can come to this page and listen to the first 3 hours, and if it interests you, you can take the course. The course is $125. And again, we cover everything that they cover in law school as far as accessing the court. You know, we don't get into contracts or different specialties or anything of that nature. We just discuss the basics of filing papers in the courts, all the forms and the processes, the procedures, moving cases, moving it to federal court, and how to write papers to a certain degree anyway. We've got a lot of different papers that you can use as examples. As a matter of fact, we do have a lot of cases just under our federal court cases that you can use as examples. So anybody wants to take that course, we only charge $125 for that. Okay, where are we? Do we have any announcements, Jan?
None other than the upcoming one on Griffiths. Where did that go? Just hold on a sec here. I'll pull it up. Yeah. The 14th Red Pill Expo is going to be held in Las Vegas, Nevada on July 11th and 12th, 2026. And I see they've posted now half a dozen of the scheduled speakers, and I have been following a number of them for some time, and they're an excellent group of speakers. They're listed now on the website, and the website is, the link is https://redpilluniversity.org/expo/hyphen/homepage/, and you can get the information there. And I should remind you that you can live stream that event on about 16 hours on the 2 days for free. And now I see they've gone back to the last 6 Red Pill Expos. Sure. And all of the presentations are given for the past 6, and you can download them free. It's a very interesting group of people, and they have great topics, and it's well worth your time. You can also keep live streaming for up to 30 days, so if you can't, you know, catch one or two or three of the presentations, you can always go in later and listen to them. So I would highly recommend that you give it a try, and there's a lot to learn out there, and they're a good group of presenters. And that's about all I have, John. I wanted to make some comments, but I'm going to save them next week about when people send questions and the kind of information we need so that we can track and do the things they need without having to go through about 10 iterations to get started. Okay. A lot of times they don't give you a phone number, or they just give you somebody's first name and you don't know what state they're in and so on and so forth. And it just, you play detective for about 20 minutes just to get started. I'll make a detailed list for next week. And that's about all I have to say tonight, John.
All right. Sounds good. All right. I just want to make a note. I just uploaded another book, and I'll probably talk about a little bit about that next week. The title of the book is Make America a Republic Again. And I'll discuss that. I just, you know, it's not going to be available for about 72 hours up on Amazon, but I just put it up there this morning, and like I said, once it becomes available, I'm going to get that out in the email for anybody who's interested in the book. Hopefully, a lot of people is interested in the book. It's $19.95 for the book, and of course, the proceeds go to support what we're doing here. NLA's, you know, working on. All of the things we're working on. The biggest thing we're working on right now, of course, is moving the courts and trying to get them to become courts of justice again from the federal court down. And our battle is in the federal court, and we have sent a presentment to the federal, to the Supreme Court. That went out last week. And I presume they should be having it probably tomorrow or something, maybe today, I don't know. But they should have those copies. We send a copy to Trump and his administration, and I think what I'm going to do once this book is published, well, like I said, I published it already. I'm just waiting for it to be approved. I think what I may do is I may send a copy if I have enough money to do this with. And again, anybody who wants to give some donations to help us on this, it's helpful. Once I can accumulate enough money to do so, I'm going to buy about 30 or 40 of these books and send it out to the Trump administration. It might be helpful. We have already sent them a copy of Government by Consent. And I think this book here, I think, is really well-focused, focusing in on our problems, the problems with our government, and particularly stemming from the courts and the collusion between the legislators and the Supreme Court. Through the Rules Enabling Act, and thereby they abrogated the law of the land, and they abrogated our unalienable rights, the Bill of Rights. They've abrogated our founding documents. That's what they've done. People who don't go into the courts, you know, have never been in the courts, they may find this hard to believe. They say, ah, come on, you know. Well, if you ever end up in court, you're going to find out you don't have rights no more. And you don't have a court of justice no more, and you'll find out that their rules trump law. Doesn't matter what law you bring up, they'll trump it and throw you out with their rules if you're going up against them, or they'll use codes and their rules to prosecute you if they're coming out after you. So, but anyway. We need to get our courts back. If we don't get our courts back, we don't have anything. And, you know, Trump is doing a great job, I believe. He's working diligently on taking out the deep state. We're starting to see some arrests. We're going to see lots of them coming down. It's going to be like just a burst of a dam. And, you know, so that's coming right now. We're seeing it now. It's dribbling out. But it's coming. It's going to come real soon. This is the summer. I think it's all going to happen. And so a lot of things are going to happen. Things are going to change. And if Trump understands that we have lost the law, because remember, he is surrounded by lawyers. He takes his advice by lawyers. He does need lawyers. After all, he is the president of the United States, and there is, I think it's USC 3, if I recall. Let me just take a quick look. I think it's USC 3. Yeah, USC Title 3 is for the president. It's about 1,000 pages, and it gives the powers and the authorities of the president, and he needs lawyers that understand that, because that's equity, that's legislative law controlling his office, his powers, his authority as president of the United States. And so he does need lawyers for that. Where the problem comes is for people and individuals, you know, people who are not working for the government, people who are not involved with interstate commercial activities. You know, they use codes against us. They brought us under civil law. And when they bring up against you a civil law, you can't beat that. That does not offer due process. You know, an accusation being made is one thing, and to be able to battle that accusation is one thing. But if you violate some code that they claim is law, and they will tell the jury, if you find that he violated that code, you have to find that person guilty, okay? So therefore, there's no due process. It's over. You're guilty because they say so, because they claim you violated that code or whatever the case may be. You can't win in those courts. In the civil law court, you can't win, particularly on criminal I'm talking about, which is no different than civil courts in the sense that they're using statutes or legislative law in order to prosecute you. But the thing is, I don't know how much Trump understands of that. I don't know how much Trump understands of that we're a republic and we're not a democracy. And there's no such thing as a democratic republic. That's an oxymoron. So that doesn't exist. And our founding fathers were clear their concern of a democracy. And you go into the Constitution. Government is to guarantee us all levels of government, from federal all the way down to the town, is to guarantee us a republican form of government. You won't find the word democracy or democratic or anything anywhere in any of our founding papers. I think it's Federalist Paper 10 where a case is made concerning against the fact that we are not a democracy. And that democracy was considered and looked at. When our founding fathers debated to bring this government together, they looked at everything. They knew that they wouldn't, you know, because they had nothing good to say about a democracy, but they had to consider it, and they talked about it, and everything was negative. They wanted no part of it. It's nothing but a destructive type of government. Always ends up destroying itself. It ends up in an oligarchy, which gets you right back to, you know, a dictatorship or a king or whatever you want to call it, a monarchy type thing. So, but, you know, we go into the Constitution, they are to guarantee us a republican form of government. So, if Trump puts everything together, and even if he does give us and understand this, and we get a republican form of government, which means we get back our courts of record, which is courts under the natural law, and not under civil law, not under legislative law, well, the problem is people can't keep it. Because if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And therein is the main reason I wrote this book. And I've said this in many different ways on our website with papers. We've filed papers in the courts. We've done memorandums and essays and a lot of information on the website and in the books and so on and so forth. But this particular book is drawn in such a way as to lay out the assault upon the people by our government and how they've destroyed our republic, and how we need to save this republic, and how we can save this republic. And that requires a little bit of time. It requires a little bit of an education. And if people are too lazy and not willing to get themselves educated and to get themselves informed then they're not interested in saving this republic, and they don't care about their liberties, because they're just going to take more and more liberty away from us. And let me tell you, it's going to get a lot worse. With AI here, oh boy, is it going to get worse. I mean, you know, you get tickets out there, they put cameras in the streets, and you drive by, they snapshot you and you're speeding or passing a light or something, and they mail you a ticket, and they got your picture, and they know exactly who you are, who's driving, because AI does a facial thing. But they also know the car, you know, the registration of the car and so on and so forth. But that's just the beginning. That's just the tip of an iceberg of what these people can do and will do unless we can stop them. And because they're all about money. And anybody paying attention to all the fraud that's going on out there, all the problems, it's all about money. Follow the money trail. Billions and billions, and potentially it's going to be trillions and trillions of dollars that they've been stealing from us. And that doesn't even take into consideration of the court system of what they've been, you know, ripping the people off from. Because everybody goes in to the courts, whether it be a traffic court or this infraction or that infraction, you know, they don't like what your property looks like, or, you know, they didn't like the color of your house, you know, whatever the case may be, and they fine you, or your fence is a little too high, they want it 4 foot, when, you know, you want to put a 6 or a 7 or an 8 foot fence there so you have privacy. Well, you can't have that in most towns. And I've been in battles with those things. And it's only going to get worse. AI is going to make it worse, because they can get a lot more violations. So if we can't win back our courts, we're done. And if Trump wins it back for us, with our help, of course, because we did a presentment, we laid the case out, we've filed it with the President of the United States and his entire administration, we served it on the United States Supreme Court, and we made it clear, it's a slam dunk. They can't argue, they can't debate what we've said there. They can't defend themselves. And so if the people rise up, enough people to get behind this, we can force it through that way, because there's a lot going on these days. And I do believe the administration will be behind us. But even without the critical mass, which is the main way I think we need to go. But if Trump pushes it through and understands this and pushes it through in the courts and gets it through and gets our courts of record back, well, then fine, he wins it for us. And then we can go into the federal court and win. The problem is we're not going to have it very long, because I'm going to circle right back to what I said a little while ago. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. We will lose it, because we can't keep it. That's why Benjamin Franklin, when he was asked by someone, you know, what kind of government do we have? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. Because apparently we couldn't keep it. We lost it very quickly. We've been a democracy for goodness sake. I don't know how long we've been called a democracy. But, of course, this goes all the way back to the Federalist Papers and the arguments and the debates. The Democratic Party, the Federalist Party, was the first party which morphed into the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party was the first party. I know there was other parties, you know, Whigs and different things of that nature. I don't know too much about those things, but there were other little political parties. But then, of course, the Republican Party surfaced 1 year, I believe it was, before Lincoln became president, and he became a Republican. And their main focus was to end slavery in America. And it's unfortunate that many of the black people think that the Democrat Party is the party that is going to free them. But they've kept them really on the plantation, so to speak. They still haven't done anything good for the black people. It's the Republicans that have done a lot of good things. And you could see that through the workings of what Trump is doing. He doesn't look at black or white or anything. None of us should. But anyway, they've been calling us a democracy for a long time. And if you ask anybody in America what they think our government is, what kind of government do we have, I'll bet you probably more than 99 out of 100, probably more than that, people will say, we're a democracy, of course. And that's ignorance, and we'll never get our nation back as long as people have that ignorance in them. They don't know and understand. Okay, I just want to make a quick note about our course for people who might be interested in taking it. And, of course, the proceeds of this court goes and supports what we're doing. So, I mean, our course is only $125, okay? Right here on the front page, I just want to click the click button here to take this course if you're interested, to sign up for a comprehensive 90-hour law course. And it's on civil procedure from the common law perspective. We add the common law into it. We charge $125. A college course on civil procedure is 5 credits, and that's 50 to 60 class hours. They charge about $2,600 per credit. You could get places cheaper, maybe $2,000 a credit. And so 5 credits at, let's say, $2,000. Okay, so 5 credits at $2,000. What's that? 5 times 2 is $10,000 for that course. Just at $2,000. Is that right? Yeah, should be $10,000. And it covers litigation, and so does our course, litigation, rules, lawsuits, filings, pleadings, discovery, motions, trials, and appeals. And again, in contrast, we're a 90-hour course for $125. So anybody that wants to battle in the courts, and I mean, some people already know, maybe, well, of course, this course could probably help them also. We bring a different perspective to the process. But anybody going into courts should know this. As a matter of fact, if we have the time and if we can do it, if we can get the money up, if we can get the backing, because it's going to take big backing to do this. And I've already talked with, many of us know Brent Allen Winters. I talked with Brent a while back about this. And I know another person that I might be able to talk to that are lawyers, okay, but they understand the common law, and Brent Allen Winters is a common law lawyer. He does practice in the courts. He does his best to bring the common law into play. He's written the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. I learned a lot from that book. And his book... again, it's a very impressive book. Again, people should look that book up. That's a great book to read. But I talked with him a while back, and I told him if we can get the funding, would he be interested in working with me to create curriculum, textbooks, K through 12, on the law, on the common law, the civics, the Constitution, court access. You know, when a child goes through school and goes through the full 12 grades, K plus 12, all the way to 12, by the time they get out of school, they should be able to walk into any court of law and take care of their business. There's nothing worse than having a lawyer take care of your business. You should be able to take care of it yourself. But of course, they don't teach us those things, but we need to get them these things into the school. But we have to get, constitutional studies. We have to get, hang on a second. Yeah, we have to get civics in our schools. Our children need to know who we are as a people, where our nation comes from, what the law is, our liberty is in the law, okay? And if you don't know the law, your liberty is in jeopardy. And if you don't, and when I say the law, I mean the Constitution. If you don't know the Constitution, how can you know these people that we elect are obeying the Constitution? How do you know they're not stepping outside of their jurisdiction? How do you know that they're not abusing this? And as we're finding out, they're all abusing this. And it's real serious. They're stealing money from us for a very long time. So again, if Trump is the winner of these things on our behalf, well, Only the people can save the republic, because the people have to keep it. And if you can't keep it, you can't have it. And if you can't have it, you don't have a Bill of Rights. We don't have a constitution. It's only a matter of time before we get back to where we just left. But AI is going to be a big challenge on all of these things. A huge, huge challenge. But maybe we'll talk about that one day, get into some deeper thinking and problems with AI. AI could be really great. I've been using AI because it's there. I took advantage of it. And, you know, all of my research I've done, you know, through books and through the Internet and searching things out and, you know, going here and there. But with AI, boy, you can gather a lot of information and pull it together real quick and do some great research and a lot more research a lot quicker with AI if you know the right questions, what to ask and how to ask. The big problem with AI, though, is you will always get the status quo. If you're going to talk about drugs as far as, you know, pharmaceutical drugs versus vitamins and versus alternative, you know, things other than, you know, the junk that they give you, the drugs that they give you, AI is going to give you the status quo answers. And, you know, AI will make the statement that there is no cure for cancer, when in fact there's at least four or five cures for cancer out there. Same thing with the law. They're not going to give you the common law. They're going to tell you the common law is because this is what AI has been, this is what they dig up, okay? And anything that comes off outside of the process of, for instance, the law that these lawyers put out there is considered fringe. And therefore, AI is not going to give you that information. But you can dig it out of AI if you know how to ask the questions, you know, and you just play around and you ask the questions. So it is a good thing on the one hand, but it's very dangerous, and it's going to be the destruction, I think, of mankind. And it doesn't necessarily mean that AI is going to become conscious. It's not possible for AI to become conscious. That's an impossibility. AI cannot have a soul. But there are a lot of dangers with AI, military-wise dangers. Powerful people can control many, many robots. Robots is something that I think we're going to see a lot more over the next so many years, if we last that long. And so I don't know if we can survive it. I think the genie's out of the bottle. It's very frightening. I see it as very, very frightening. But we should have some conversation about that. Just to cover one other thing that we do here at National Liberty Alliance, especially for the people who are new, you know, we're building committees of safety, and people need to learn about the committees of safety. You can find out a lot about that right here under the tab, Start a Committee of Safety. Just click on that and follow the breadcrumb trail. It'll lead you through all kinds of processes, informations, free downloads, videos, and all the things. And what the Committee of Safety will teach you is how to have government by consent. You see, that's the big problem. Only the people can save America, but they don't know how to have government by consent. People say, you know, anything they can think of, they have to vote. That's not government, but that is a little piece of government by consent. But the controlling of the political process, that's government by consent. The controlling these individuals that are in office and casting them out when they're not obedient to the law of the land, that's government by consent. To get involved with the grand jury, either as an administrator to really bring the juries and out and give them an orientation and make them free and independent juries, each and every one of them, whether it's a grand jury or a trial jury, that's government by consent. To sit on a trial jury totally free of in your own mind, in your own heart, following the rules written in your heart to execute and exercise what you think is the right thing as a grand jurist or as a petit jurist, okay, that's government by consent. If the judge tells you that you have to rule in a certain way, if they broke this code or this law, well, that's a denial of due process. That is to the individual that's coming up for trial. And that's jury tampering. You can't, you know, the whole thing about the jury system is to really respond to what you see from the heart and as you see of what is right and what is wrong and what you think. And once they buckle you down to something that forces you against your own conscience, that's not government by consent. So there's a lot to government by consent. There's a lot of powers. We the people can control this country if we had committees of safety of maybe 50 to 100 people in every county executing and exercising their unalienable right of government by consent. We would take 100% control of our government. 100%. If we execute and exercise the laws of the land and exercise our rights as a free and independent people. We the people are the lawmakers. We the people are the sovereign. They are not. We give them powers to do different things, and we give them jurisdictions to execute those powers. But they don't have rights to do anything. I mean, outside of their business, you know, as just a regular human being out in the world, of course they have rights there, but exercising an authority, they don't have rights, they have powers. And we can give them those powers and we can take away those powers. You know, we the people ordained and established the Constitution for them. So we're the ordainers of the law. We receive that power and authority through the Declaration of Independence. Takes us right back to the beginning of the Bible, back in Genesis. But nevertheless, the Declaration of Independence brings us under the laws of nature and of nature's God, and to receive His blessings. And one of the requirements of government, there are six points that the government should be focused upon. And whatever they do, they should be executing at least one of those 6 points on everything they do. And one of those points, okay, is to secure the blessings of liberty. And they surely don't do that. But if we make them do that, and we can make them do that, that's government by consent. But one person can't do it. A handful of people can't do it. You know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. These political parties are controlled by just a handful of individuals. And that's why it took so long to be able to take it away from these people. Trump was able to do that. He's a unique individual. And he's continuing to do that. But, you know, again, these powers that these people have taken... we have, you know, just by, you know, controlling the majority that participates. For instance, for those who don't know, every county in the United States, 3,134 counties, every county is controlled by 4 to 5 people. Those counties in states, for instance, New York State has 62 counties. So 62 times 4, you could do the math, that's so many people that come up. Well, all those people are controlled by 4 to 5 individuals on a state level. And that's true in every state. And then there's a small group of people on the federal level that control the whole political party. And that's true with the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, and any other party you got out there. Doesn't matter. They all operate the same way. They operate under a situation called the committee man process. And the true committee man process was the committees of safety. Anybody who joins the committee of safety, you're a committee man. They were referred to as that. Our founding fathers referred to themselves as committee men when they came together to unite and to bring forward the Declaration of Independence and to execute you know, the Continental Congress on 2 different occasions and to execute debates and the war, the Declaration of Independence and the war, and to run that war. That was run by the committees of safety. And they chose individuals and created a form of government, but they were controlled by the committee of safety. Every Well, they didn't have counties back then. Well, I think they did have counties, but I don't know how much they were broken up into. But you know, each one of the new states coming in, of course, was run through a committee of safety. And when this nation was came together and produced the founding documents, the foundation of our founding documents is the Declaration of Independence, and Constitution, of course, is the law, the framework of the law that we ordained and established, and the Bill of Rights is the capstone. And those three documents were brought together by the Committees of Safety. So our founding fathers put us together as the Committees of Safety. Then they controlled this government through Committees of Safety. But then that was hijacked as time went on. The minions of the New World Order, the lawyers working to put statutes everywhere, control education eventually, control everything, but to control the committee men, to control the party boss, to create the party boss system. George Washington spoke about this early on in his farewell address and warned us that this is the problem we're facing today. That was back in the turn of the century back there. But again, today, if we could get about 100 people, I think that's the ideal number, and that number would grow in leaps and bounds once we train our children a proper education and teach them that they have a duty to return back to their country, because they're born in a country that has where people have liberty. We have a unique type of government. Although it's been robbed from us, we're trying to get it back, and we will get it back. The question is, can the people keep it? That's the problem. But if you have 100 people and you multiply that by 3,134, well, just 100 counties, 3,100 counties, okay, that's 310,000 people. And I think we have something like 340 million people, the population. Maybe someone could look that up, 350, 360 million people, I don't know. But we only need 310,000 people, because we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And I do believe proper training of our children and of ourselves will get people involved on the committees of safety within their county, and that 100 people would be just the beginning of things. I do believe that would really, with a proper education in our schools and for ourselves, that would build up quite quickly. And I think it would be nothing to think about your committee of safety having maybe 1,000 people, depending, of course, of the population of your counties and so on and so forth. I think that's no problem, no problem. If it's properly educated, if the children are properly educated and we are properly educated. And again, therein is the book that I just wrote and I just published this morning, and I'll be sharing that over the email this week sometime once it actually is available. And I think we'll talk about it a little bit next week. Okay, with that, let's see if we can take some questions here. Let me see who we got. We got a few people in the queue. We'll take our first caller. Is someone calling 361, a wireless caller? Maybe you can give us your first name and your state. You got the mic. Area code. You got the mic. You've been unmuted. Wireless caller. One more call for area code 361. 484 area phone number. You got the mic. Hey, maybe they're having problems or they stepped away. We'll take our next person then. Ross, how you doing? You got the mic.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. I was asking as you said, you using AI, I asked a size question about what's the distinction between lawful and legal? They are two different things. It's not the same thing. Legal is about procedural process of legislative law, and one is about the right of possession.
I'm not sure I understood. Were you asking a question, Ross, or making a statement? I didn't understand. I know you're talking about AI. Maybe you can try to tell us again. Give us some different words.
I said I asked AI about what's the difference between the lawful and legal. And legal is about your rights, and the other one is just administrative procedure for the legal side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like legislation gives legal authority to the administrative side of the government to enforce the law.
Well, that's a very interesting point. You know, I've always seen it not really meaning too much difference between the two, but maybe I should look a little deeper into that. But you know, if something is lawful, it's lawful. And if it's legal to do something, then that's lawful to do it. But AI gave you two different positions then, huh? Or maybe it's the way the word is used, maybe. That may be the thing.
And yes, that's how I word my question, and that's how they used it. If you were talking about land, lawful ownership of land to a legal ownership of land is two different things. It's not the same thing.
Well, there is a game that they play with land, of course, because nobody really owns their own land. Nobody owns their home, because if you don't pay the tax man every month, they're going to take it away from you. So therefore, you don't own your home and you don't own your land. That's something that's going to be done away with soon. There's talk going on right now about that. A little bit here or there is leaking out, but that's going to be corrected. And it has to, because, you know, this is something that's only been around for about 120 years or so, 125 years roughly, tax on land, you know. And then, of course, income tax came after that. I think it was in the late 1900s, maybe, when you know, the tax on land came to be, and it was after World War I, and mostly moving into World War II, when income tax was being pushed. But that whole thing was being erected way back in the turn of the century, turn into the 20th century, so 1913. But that's interesting and lawful. I'm going to look a little more into that. And again, I think it has to do with the way that the word is used. But ultimately, they do kind of mean the same thing, because it's either lawful to do something and it's legal to do something, you know, depending on how you...
Yes, but I think the founding fathers worded it the way is they didn't want any administrative involvement in the land process. That's because if they get involved, they say they have the lawful right to own it. That's why they tax us, because they think they own the land outright, because they have the, no one had claimed the original land patent.
Well, again, that's another game they play with the land patent, because they're not going to recognize that. I know there's a process to get you out of this, and that is to press the issue within your town to change the status of your ownership of the property away from residential to private. And that potentially is a way to get outside of the tax. I know some people who tried to do it, and it's going up against a wall to try to make the change. I don't know if anybody actually had it done. But it's a worthwhile argument that could have been made.
John?
Yep.
That land has to be granted to you to really own it. Because the federal government is the sovereign who has to grant it to you.
I don't understand. What do you mean? Who has to grant what to who? You're saying that the government has to grant the land to you by making
yes.
that? Well,
that's what the land patent, the original land patent is about, is the original
right.
grant.
Well, again, it is a fraud, though, because they can't grant me anything. I don't own the government anything, and the government owes me nothing. Government is just to exercise and execute the law that we, the people, ordained and established and be faithful to that law. That's what their job is to do. They don't grant us anything. Now, they may talk about granting us something because that gives them additional power that we never gave them, doesn't it? Our founding fathers never would have tolerated a land tax or property tax of any kind. And they never would have tolerated even an income tax. Okay, that all came to be in 1913, particularly, and land tax was being moved over into in the end of the 19th century. So, but yeah, they would use that they have to grant you that. No, you can use the law to force them to change your property to a instead of having being a residential. To be private.
See, that's what they said when I was talking about the land patent. They said you have to go to the court to force the ministerial and to recognize it.
Well, I agree with that.
That
is the point. Whether you're going to be successful in that is another story again, because...
Yes, because the attorneys are in control of the court. That's right. And the attorneys are in, like, the civil law process, because that gives them, in their minds, control over us.
Well, that's what it's all about, to control us so that they can make more money from us, because that's all it's about. It's amazing that the governor of California has gotten away with what he's gotten away with. It's just unbelievable the amount of money that he has taken in from federal government and used it, and misappropriated it, and probably stuffed a lot into a lot of people's pockets, like that rail to nowhere, the train to nowhere. That they put billions of dollars into. It's just amazing what this guy is getting away with. What's going on?
The Democratic Party allows him to get away with it because the Democratic Party likes being big government.
Absolutely. Well, we have...
That also set the problem. Democrat, Republicans, some Republicans like big government, too.
Of course. Well, again, you got Republicans that are just spies for the Democratic Party. You know, they're called rhinos, the Republican in name only. But we have an opportunity here. We really have a great opportunity if we can come together and get educated together. And if we can get, if Trump and his administration is properly educated and they understand certain things concerning the natural law, we have an opportunity to get rid of political parties. I've written a paper on this, and I may do just a presentment to the president just on that one thing. Political parties have got to go. No republic can survive a political parties. Again, all of our founding fathers spoke about this, and the most boisterous one seems to have been George Washington. He said he had a lot to say about this. And that this is what's going to destroy America if we don't get rid of, he called them factions, which is the first political party was the Federalists. And then, of course, you had the Anti-Federalists. Not that they were called Anti-Federalists back then, and not that necessarily during the process of time that they called themselves Federalists, but after the process of the debates and everything, they did take on the name of Federalists, and they tried to impress the other side, those who were against them, as anti-federalists. And they tried to put that name on Madison. They tried to put that onto Jefferson. And when Jefferson became president, he said, "We are all Federalists. We are all Republicans." Didn't say we're all the Democrats, though. Now, the Democratic Party didn't start until, I think, around 1918, not long after Jefferson's presidency, the Democratic Party rose its ugly head. But we have an opportunity now because the Democratic Party has fallen apart. And I think we're going to really see that in this coming election. And that being said, we have an opportunity to get rid of...
I think that also why we see the Democratic Party falling apart is because they didn't like the ruling in the Supreme Court about redistricting process.
Right.
That's why they are falling apart, because
That really disturbs me, this redistricting. You know, basically things should be broken up by counties. Now, counties could be combined together because it depends. Like, let's take New York State, okay? New York State, we have 62 counties. And with those 62 counties, we have 62 state senators. Now, they have gerrymandered these districts.
That's what I was saying, right? Was trying to get to that gerrymandering system.
Right.
The Supreme Court sort of warred against it.
Right. Well, they're still gerrymandering. They're just stopping the gerrymandering according to race. And it's just the beginning of it. We need to push it further. First of all, I live in Dutchess County. In my state, there are 62 counties. I live in Dutchess County. Now, I had lived in Ulster County for a while, and I lived I forget the county north of Ulster County, but in any event, then I moved over. I live in Dutchess County, and I'm going to tell you all these three counties, and I visited people, you know, for instance, going up into other counties. Upstate New York, or even down in Putnam County or Westchester County. Every county, the people are a little different. You know, the people who live in Dutchess, you know, we share a lot of things together the same, but Dutchess County people are just a little bit different than Ulster County people, and Putnam County people, and Westchester County people, or Orange County people. And you would, you know, logic says that if you have 62 counties and you have 62 senators, well, you have one senator representing each county. Then you have the assembly districts, okay? And the assembly districts here in New York is 150 assemblymen, okay? Now, that might bring some pieces of counties together to make that work, because we have 62 counties, and if you have two assembly, if you have how many assemblymen did I say? I forgot what I said.
15.
I think 120, I think. Is that what I said? I don't remember, but it's something like that. But it's just shy of a few counties. So counties are broken in half. Maybe a county that's small, they have one, and a county that's larger may have two, and they're just split in half. I don't know how they work that out, but, I mean, I could look into the assembly districts, and they looked pretty... orderly to some degree, but there's gerrymandering going on in that too. Again, the gerrymandering was working towards trying to get enough Democrats and minimize the Republicans, because they were the ones who were really pushing a lot of this, but the Republicans were doing it too. But here's the thing. I have talked to a lot of people about getting rid of parties. People really believe we have to have two parties. We have to have them, because they were trained to believe that. Why do we have to have that? You know, when we have parties, you have party leaders. So when you have party leaders, then they have party decisions. And everybody follows the party, and the people is left out of this. But if you are going to, if it's a state representative or a federal representative, and you're representing your area, you'd be representing the people and not the party. But they don't represent the people. They represent the party. And therein is the problem. And this is the problem that we have, and this is the problem George Washington brought up, that party boss would take control of the whole thing, and they would control everything. And that's exactly what they're doing. You know,
when people are saying they want the particular person to represent them, but the candidate themselves saying they want representatives representing them directly without a political party, so they want political parties instead of getting rid of them.
Yeah, I didn't get that end part. Instead of what? Getting rid of them?
No, I said the people can't contradict themselves. They say they want elected officials to represent them,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want to get rid of political parties.
Right, and that's sort of like, yeah, they're against themselves. Yeah, absolutely, I agree with that. And therein is the problem, because they're not taking care of the business of the people. You know, if there were no parties, then we would send representatives to the federal government, whatever it would be, legislators, or we'd send them to the state legislators. Okay, they'd be our representatives of the people, let's say, in my case, of Dutchess County. And they're going to represent the people of Dutchess County and what their desires are, what the needs are, and take care of the business of the people. That's not happening. And the only reason that that's not happening is because of political parties. And
like an individual who wants to submit a petition to Congress as an individual, not through the political party, directly to the Congress itself, they being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
They only want to be a party petition to be heard.
I missed that. A party petition, what?
Okay. If a group of citizens, as the people petitioning Congress, go outside of the political party system, they'd be ignored.
Right, exactly. And that's what's happening. You know, Tulsi is the great example of that. You know, I listened to her story that when she first came into Congress and the way that she was treated and the things that was going on, she was just totally amazed by what was going on. You know, and, you know, she was talking particularly about a situation, for instance, where the news was holding her up as the next best thing since sliced bread. And, you know, because she's a woman, you know, she was in the service and a veteran and she had accomplished other goals. And she was the... She was going to become the next president. This is what the Democratic Party was talking about when she had no clue what they were talking about. And the news media talking about it, lifting her up as something in the Democratic Party. And she had mentioned that, I don't know where they're coming with this craziness. It's really strange and weird. Okay. But again, once they started to realize who she was and what she was all about, that she was standing up for the right things, all of a sudden they just threw her in the trash, you know, and they just everything they could do against her, they did, and it was a great move for her to move over into the administration. I think she still is a Democrat, but she's working with the Republicans, which is the way it should be. Look, we got to get rid of the Republican Party, got to get rid of the Democratic Party, got to get rid of every party. Just send people as representatives and represent the people. And then there is no problems with anything, because the party bosses, there'll be no party bosses. Without parties, there's no party bosses. With parties, you will always have a party boss. And again, that's exactly what George Washington spoke about in his farewell address. So,
hey, Yard.
Okay, Ross, thanks. We'll take our next caller. Let's see, it looks like Terry, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you from again, Terry?
Hey, John. I'm right by Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm in the land of the Learing Center.
Yep-er.
Yeah, great state of Minnesota with Tampon Tim.
Yep.
Hey, did you ever get I sent you the email address of the guy that is the person handling Mike Lindell's lawsuit here that's happening right now. Did you ever get that?
I don't recall that. I think I remember. Did we speak about that?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago we talked about that, and you asked for it, and I said I would send it to you, and I did. I sent it to the mail.
Yeah, and I'll keep an eye out for it. I've been really, really busy, and I got so many things going on.
That's fine. The reason we talked about it was is because of what the writ that you did here to the Senate, right. And then what I was talking about was the fact that I think a lot of us are spinning our wheels because Mike Lindell, you know, this is the second or third time that the government has gone after him. And now they're going after him because of the voting, what do you call those? What were the voting booth things that were all hacked?
That's going to disappear because all of that is proven to be true and it's just going to fall away.
Yeah, it was absolutely true. But because he said it was true and Trump did, now they're fining him $500 a day if he doesn't pay them another $130,000 or something like that. So now he's begging for money from, I mean, I get like a phone call from him every day here, you know, it's just automated. But send it to you again or not?
Yeah, please do. But, you know, one of the problems, you know, I don't like to really try to communicate with individuals through email. I'd rather do either through the snail mail, where you actually do a real letter, or a phone call, you know. But I wouldn't want to make a cold call to him. But if I can get his actual physical mailing address, not necessarily the address he lives at, but the address he gets his mail at, you know, if I can get his mailing address, I'd like to send him some stuff. I mean, I understand that. You know, he's not a poor guy, and he's in the middle of a lot of things, and maybe he could be someone that could help us, you know, meet our goal to go professional here.
Him and Trump are not poor guys, but when you start charging people $500 million, you're basically stealing that much money from them by just going, I'm going to take this money from you because you said the truth. Which is really what happened with, you know, everybody on January 6th. Those guys, did at most, a couple of them may have been they weren't even trespassing because all they had to do was ask them to leave and they would have left. So, you know, that was all fabricated. This is all fabricated.
The governor out there in California spoke about taxing these people 100% on the income coming in from whatever money they would get. You know, this is the January 6th people, and that's just you know that's pretty evil to begin with. But again, that's a focused tax on a certain group of individuals.
Those guys sticking them in jails, and I saw pictures of them. They were laying on the ground with just cushions on the ground, in shorts, and the way they were treated was that was despicable. Is what they did
to
those guys.
That's nothing new. They do that to every patriot. We saw what they did out west there with the Hammonds and the Bundys and the little boy Finkin. This is just a normal thing, and you know they do what's called diesel therapy. It's just common things being done. If you're a patriot and you're going to jail and you're a political prisoner, because that's what you are usually, you're going to suffer all those things. They chain you to the floor and you can barely reach the toilet. They don't give you a blanket. They put you in solitary confinement. These people are just evil, pure evil. God's going with them.
I made sure I don't put words in your mouth, so if I do, just let me know. From what I was listening to you, you said that we the people write laws. Am I putting words in your mouth? Is that what you meant?
That's exactly what I said. We are the lawmakers.
Okay, so which laws did we make, and are you saying those laws that we make are not what our employees make? And then secondly, are you saying those are the laws that are in the Constitution?
is the laws that we made. First of all, we made a covenant with God. That's the Declaration of Independence. It was a prayer to God, at the same time a declaration to the world of our independence and our desire to live under the laws of nature and of nature's God, and in return receive his blessings. And that's who we are as a people. Blessed is the nation, the Bible tells us, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Okay? And that's who we are as a people. Our first order of business after we wrote the Declaration of Independence. Now remember, it was Thomas Jefferson that penned that paper, but it was on behalf of all of us. Okay? And then we have what's the Declaration of Independence. And we have the Constitution. And that Constitution rests on the foundation of law, which is the Declaration of Independence. And what does the preamble say? We the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. We wrote the Constitution. We made the law. We gave them powers. We gave the legislators 18 powers. We gave the court certain powers. We gave the president certain powers. Okay? We wrote the Constitution. We allowed them to write legislation to expand on the powers and the authorities of the different government agencies, which of course includes the President of the United States also. It includes the Congress. It includes the United States Supreme Court. It includes every federal agency. Okay, we gave them that power to do that, to make laws on all those things. We gave them the powers, and we wrote it in the law, in Article 1, the power to write law to control interstate commercial activities. Now, the states have the same powers. It's restricted to their states, and it's called equity. It's legislative law. And our equity, because we are a natural law government, a natural law republic, that the governing of that equity is the laws of nature and of nature's God, which is the rules of the court. It's the rules of common law. And that's why we the people, when we go into let's say we indict somebody. We're supposed to be free and independent. I don't know that there's been a free and independent grand jury or a trial jury in a long time. They're all swayed and controlled. We can go back, to the mid-1800s. Lysander Spooner wrote about the problems already concerning the grand jury. But the bottom line is the power and the authority of the grand jury is that the government, if they want to file some complaint against an individual, they have to come to the feet of the people at the grand jury and beg and ask for a potential for an indictment against someone. And we either say yay or nay if we're free and independent. We are the lawmakers. We make the decision. And when someone goes to trial, we're supposed to make the decision on not only the facts, but the law and the penalty. Now, they give us the facts. And even to that, that's controlled because they got these rules that are able to remove evidence, and they do it all the time. They prevent evidence from coming into the court, so they have control of the facts to begin with. They don't allow them to decide the law. You know, we have the power of nullification. You know, if someone, let's say someone working for the government, okay, commits a crime or they're accused of committing a crime, and they are governed by regulations. They're governed by codes, okay, statutes. And so when they go to court, if it's not a criminal case, they go before a judge, okay, a one-person judge. They can appeal that. And they got two appellate systems going up, okay? Now, if it becomes a criminal offense against that individual, okay, then that has to move into a court of law, okay, which is a court of record where the people decide. Because any criminal act has to be decided by the people, not by an individual judge. No, it's by the people. The people are the masters. So when in court, the way it's supposed to go is we look at as a trial jury. We consider the law that's being applied and that's making this person guilty, potentially speaking, and they may very well be guilty of breaking that law and into a criminal offense somehow. And we may look at that and say, yeah, we don't like that. We nullify the law. It doesn't stand no more. Person can't be held guilty on that one for that thing. What we're looking for is the facts. But at the other side of the things, we could look at a statute that's being applied upon an individual and say, well, yeah, they agreed to this, and you know they're supposed to be operating under those rules. We will stand on that statute and hold that against them. But some statutes are just horrible. They're terrible, and they could be nullified by the people. So the people are supposed to, first of all, decide the facts of the case, then the law of the case. And at the end of the day, they had to decide what the penalty is, with an eye on restitution, ultimately. You know, the government, they want to just put everyone in jail. That's all they want to do. That's not the way common law works. You know, common law is towards restitution. You know, you get an evil person, shoot somebody or something like that, well, I think jail is called for that person. But most crimes are not violent crimes, and you know, there are other things that could be done. You know, but again, we are the lawmakers. We make the final decisions. And the United States Supreme Court says that once the jury speaks, that it is just as more powerful, it's just as powerful and even more powerful than we have spoken, meaning the United States Supreme Court. And that the United States Supreme Court cannot overturn the decision of a trial jury. Okay, nor can any court system deny or throw out an indictment. It can't happen. The people have spoken. You see, we are the sovereigns. That's the way this system was created. But people don't know that. You see, therein is the education. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. You're not going to be free if you don't understand you're the lawmaker. Now remember, we are not the ultimate decider of the law. Ultimately, it's God. You see, the king of the court is Jesus Christ. We're a Christian nation. We're founded on the Bible. And so the king of the court who tells us in his word that he wrote the laws on the hearts of all men. We know when a wrongdoing has been done. We know because we live in the same world, you know, there's the person that's being accused, okay, so we're a peer to the individuals being brought before us, but there are 12 individuals, 12 witnesses, just like 12 disciples, 12 witnesses, to take a look at the case and make the decision to decide innocence or guilt, okay? And we ought to work off the heart. We know God wrote in the heart, the laws in the heart, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and so on. So we already know those things are wrong. We don't need any kind of statute to tell us that those things are wrong. We don't need statutes to tell us anything. Statutes are to govern individuals who are working for the government or working in commercial activities on interstate level. We want them to control them. We want them to control the truckers. I mean, look at the crazy things with all of these truckers, for instance, that are driving interstate, and they can't even read a sign, these illegals that come in. They can't even read the signs. They can't, and a lot of people have died from these truckers, these people. They have they were not educated trained, I guess, in driving these large vehicles and the law and the speed that they have to obey and you know, the rules of the road. So we want them to do that, okay? But we don't want them to control our behavior. So you see, we can trump anything that they say. In a court of law, if the jury is called, we can trump anything they say. We say, no, we don't like that, forget about it, we're not going to talk about it no more. So the jury has that power. We're the lawmakers. We're the final say. We wrote the Constitution. We wrote the Bill of Rights. We wrote the Declaration of Independence. We make the decision, yay or nay, on an indictment. We make the decision, innocent or guilt. We make the decision what the penalty might be. That's power. That's the law. That's who we are. So we make the law. But so God wrote it in the laws, remember?
I'm confused. So you're saying there's laws in the Constitution, there's natural law, and then there's their laws. Is that, am I putting words in your mouth? Is that correct?
Absolutely right. Natural law, look at natural law, which we often call common law. Natural law is simply common sense with an eye on justice. That's all it is. We make it up as we go. Okay? It's a series of maxims, truths that cannot be denied or argued against. All men are created equal. Can you argue that? Yes, some people have more abilities for this, or someone has more abilities for that, whatever the case may be. But all men are equal, okay? And no one can deny that. That's a maxim, okay? Truth is self-evident. That's a maxim. Water does not run up a hill unless you put a pump on it, okay? That's a maxim, okay? A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. So when they say, hey, this is similar to the case, we found that person guilty there, we got to find this person guilty there. No, a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. There are no two cases identically the same. But that's their claim to common law, okay? But common law is law that we make up off the fly, okay? It's common sense applied upon the facts with an eye on justice. You don't make it any more difficult than that, because that's exactly what it is. And people don't know that. That's a shame. That's why if a people expect to be ignorant and free to these things, they're never going to be free. You can't have it. We are the lawmakers. Now remember, what did we do in the Constitution? Okay, we wrote Article 1. Okay, Article 1 controls the legislators. And let's read, let me read here the preamble, okay, of the Constitution. We the people of the United States, not we the states, not we the judges, not we the legislators, not we the president, no, we the people of these United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. And here's the key: to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The obedience of the people is of the people working in government that we place there, either through election. Some of them are appointed by those people who are elected. Some people are employed by those who are elected or whatever, in different agencies, okay? We write the law. We control them. That's what this law is all about, to control those people, okay? As far as the law of man, we are under the law of God. We're under natural law. And again, I'll say it again. Look, they try to use logic to create statutes. And a lot of the logic makes sense. As long as it makes sense, it's fine. If it doesn't make sense, then we can nullify it. It's null and void because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't uphold the principles of the rules of common law. And the rules of common law, again, I'll say it again, is simply common sense with an eye or an application of justice. That's all it is. So now you have people who are making laws, and it's called equity, it's legislative law, to control commercial activities, to control government agencies and the agents therein, okay? And they use some logical points to make the law. But we've laid out the framework, okay? For instance, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, Congress shall have the presence, the power we gave them. We wrote this. This is the law right here. I'm going to read the law. The people wrote this. We, the people, ordained and established this. We wrote it. Section 8, the Congress, this is the power we're giving them. The Congress shall have power, not rights, power, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and exercises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense, the general welfare of the United States. But the duties imposed and exercises shall be uniform throughout the United States. 2, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. We gave them the power to do that. Okay, we wrote the law that gives them the power. It's lawful for them to do that. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. To establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. You see, we empowered them to write these legislative laws, which, again, not to govern us, but to govern those who agree to operate within the process of commercial activities, in this case, interstate commercial activities on a federal level, and people who are elected into government or appointed into government or employed into government, they are accepting the regulations and the statutes that control them. They are not to break them. We authorize that. But they abuse it often. And when they abuse it and it shows up in court, we nullify it. We are the lawmakers. People need to really understand what we're saying here. This is if you don't understand this, you don't have liberty. You don't have a constitution. You have no control. You cannot and do not and will never have government by consent if you don't understand that we are the lawmakers. And again, we control the whole process in the courts. Now, when you go into the Declaration of Independence, let's just look a little bit at that. Okay. So let's read, this is the preamble, okay? I'm going to read two paragraphs of it. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinion of mankind requires that they should declare the cause which impelled them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And by the way, Jefferson fought his entire life to free slaves. You know, he wasn't a contradiction. Matter of fact, in the book I just wrote, I have a section on that, but I have a section on that even in Government by Consent book also. So we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers. Remember, we read that before. We're powering the legislators to write legislation. We started reading some of the powers we were given them. So we are deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. Governed, that's the people, that's us. We consent to it. And when they make a mistake, they write something that we don't like, and it surfaces in the court, we say, no go, we don't like that. It's nullified, it's gone. Don't bring it up no more. Let's move on. We just made the law. We just made the decision. We're moving on without the application of that legislated law. And legislated law is called positive law. And the reason why it's called positive law is because it's controlled by the rules of common law. Okay, so let me just finish reading this last paragraph. Endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. We are the lawmakers. To abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Okay, now there's more. There's another paragraph or so more of this, but before we get into the details of the problems with the king, that he's refused this and so on and so forth. But right, as you move through our documents, we are the lawmakers. They've robbed us of that. They robbed us of an education that we should have been taught that. That's civics. That's constitutional, constitutional instructions. Why would they teach you the power? They don't want to teach you the power. They want the power. So if you're ignorant to the power, they wield all the power. And everybody thinks they have to go along. You know, traffic court, total. They have no power or authority over us in traffic court. You can't write anything to control my behavior. If I want to pass a red light, I want to pass a red light. of course, it's not, it's foolish to pass a red light if there's traffic, but if it's, you know, in the middle of the evening or the night or whatever, and, you know, you can hear the crickets at the red light stop, and you look around, nobody's there, you move on. You're not going to give me a ticket because you don't have the power or the authority to give me a ticket. You know, if I injure somebody, I'm going to pay the consequence of that. Okay? If I am reckless, well, a cop should stop me. Maybe I'm drunk. Well, that sounds about right. Okay? Maybe they need to take the keys away from you. You know, you want the keys back, go down and talk to the grand jury administrators down at the courthouse, because that's where I'm going to drop your keys off. You can go pick it up. We'll have your car towed. You see, people are ignorant to the law. Okay? And therein is the problem. I make a big thing about this as often as I can, and I'm trying to wake the people up. You know, people should be really involved in the committees of safety. They should be involved in their education, all the free courses and the courses we even charge for, you know, which is minimum. You know, we only charge $5 a month as membership to get access to a few different courses. But we have other courses that you can become a member and not be a donating member and get into three or four courses we give totally for free. And if people are that poor that they can't afford the $5, we'll flip the switch and give them all the education they want anyway. It doesn't matter. We've always made that statement here. Okay? We give them a law course. Where are you going to find a law course to teach people, you know, how to go into the courts and how to file pleadings and go through discovery and motions and find all the forms and what the process and the procedures are, what is due process, what is the proper mindset to have when you get into the courts, what's the controlling factors of a court, you know? We teach all that for $125. You need to go spend thousands of dollars to get that done, okay, just on these five credits alone, okay, if you go into a college to get this. Let's run $2,600 times five credits. That's $13,000, okay? And if it's $2,000, it's $10,000. And their course is 50 to 60 hours. Our course is 90 hours. And we teach court access and the common law because we intend on getting back to the common law. I raise the common law in any case I write or get involved in. I always bring up the common law, okay? Sometimes they kind of let it go, they don't say nothing, but at the end of the day, you know, if I'm initiating and going after the status quo, they're going to throw me out, because that's what they do. They don't want to give you justice. They don't want to get a mark anywhere showing that you've accomplished something against them anyways, you know? So, hey, anyway, just look at the time. I've got to move on. Maybe I can get one more person.
Before I just wanted to say something really simple. And it's not meant to be confrontive or, you know, to be offensive.
Mm-hmm.
My standpoint here is the problem that I have with what we are as America right now is that our judicial system, our public servants and bar lawyers are prosecuting and victimizing the innocent, and that's
absolutely
what I consider to be the fundamental problem in the United States. And while it's right now, it's a global problem because everybody's doing the same thing. It's a global problem. But you know, when we first founded this, and that's why I love the Declaration of Independence. You're probably not going to like this, but I'm not a fan of the Constitution at all. I love the Declaration of Independence.
I'd like to hear more about that. Maybe next week you can bring it up when we have time.
I wasn't going to make any statement. I'm not trying to be defensive. What I'm trying to say is that I base everything on the fact that the job of our government is to defend the innocent, not to prosecute or victimize the innocent. And that's where I'm going to leave it at there.
Absolutely, and I make that point all the time. The job of the federal court is to stand up for our unalienable rights. They are to stand up for the people when they come into that courtroom. They don't do that because it's all about, you see, the federal courts is all about rights, okay? And it's either right or it's wrong, but the rights are clear. We've laid it out clear. Logic is clear. The end result is clear. But anyway, I'd like this. I think this could be a good conversation. Remember, iron sharpens iron. You know, that's sort of a biblical principle.
Proverbs, yeah. As iron sharpens iron, so the countenance of a good friend or an enemy, even. So, yeah.
So
no, I just wanted to leave it there, John. have a discussion or take up any more time. And if you're willing to have a conversation with me, I would love to do that. And if you don't, I'm fine with that too.
Well, next week, try to get in early, and we'll spend some time. And if we have to take another time another to continue that conversation.
I would have been here sooner, but I was out working, running my bobcat. I got an acre yard, and I'm contouring it, so that's why I was a little late tonight. So
that's okay. Yeah. We'll get in a half hour, maybe. Look, at when the conversation is good, stay on it, okay?
Yeah.
I try to get good things to come out of people, and I try to put good things into people. And from time to time, of course, everybody has error. I know I have error. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm looking to find it, and I'll find it through correction. Correction is to those who have forsaken the way, another biblical principle. You know?
Yeah. You guys have a good night.
Okay, God bless you. Okay, we'll take another call or two. It's late, and I am totally exhausted, so I'm not going to spend much time. Anonymous, what's your first name and your state? We only got a minute or two. Anonymous, you've been unmuted. You haven't been unmuted. Let me see. Yeah, you're unmuted now.
There I am.
Yep.
Good evening, John.
How you doing?
Elizabeth, I'm in Arizona. But, you know, I have a question, and I'm going to suspend it for a moment because I just want to address something here for me, is that, you know, our spiritual laws are what guide us, and they come out of the Bible, and I know you know that, and a lot of us know that, but we have a fallen nature. We're fallen. And if we don't have the law, we will end up like all these other people that are eating each other alive, literally and figuratively. And, you know, it's like, it's humbling. You know, I mean, part of having the law is, for me, is to strive to understand that. Because I get undone, you know. I mean, but I love the law because the law is direction.
Amen.
And it was given to us by God, but... You know, the Holy Alliance, they call it the Council of Vienna, you know, they demonized the Bible and went after the King James, and that's why we're so scattered. You know, you talk about gerrymandering. I mean, we don't have any, it's hard to talk to people. But, you know, I do also just say that, you know, we are in the last days, and I think one of our jobs is not so much to worry about the future and but to put God's enemy under his footstool. That's one of our jobs. And we may never see the dreams we have, but it's going to be much greater, you know, what's coming, but it may not be what we think it's going to be on this earthly plane. And, you know, we don't have the time and all that yet, but it's close. So anyway, now I'm going to make a screeching halt and I'm going to ask you if you can, because I've been listening, and I really love your IRS case. I mean, it's really putting pieces together, and I'm like grasping for them, and then I've got to just let it go by and come back and listen again. And something I haven't been able to grab onto yet is the relationship between due process and jurisdiction, because there's a lot of jurisdictions, right? But maybe there aren't, you know, maybe there's one, and that is that I'm entitled to due process. But if I go into a court because somebody's reported something about me, and in this way we think now in the mindset of the world is a jury trial, that's a big deal. Well, no, it should be every day. Every day there should be a jury available to bring, you know, the common man in, woman in to work out their fence problems, you know, and the hatred and the, you know, and to bring the law in, you know, in a way that maybe can help both parties.
I can help the jurisdiction. Okay. Uh-huh. Maybe I can help you with the idea of the jurisdictions. In Black's Law Dictionary, there are 51 jurisdictions, 51.
Uh-huh.
And 50 of them are man-made law. It's legislative law. Okay. They make
say that again. Say it again. It cut out. I'm sorry.
In law, there are 51 jurisdictions, okay, mm-hmm. 51. Now, and many of them have no application at all to us at all. There's only one of those that have application to us, and that is positive law through equity, through legislative law, which is equity. It's called equity. Now, they may call equity is that which is right and just. Okay, that's what equity is. It's justice. Okay, and justice, the only way you can have justice is if God's law is applied upon it. Okay, man can write law, but God's law is applied upon it. Okay, and so we have our equity, which is listed in the Constitution. So the jurisdiction we gave to the United States Supreme Court and all courts is equity and law. Now, equity is legislative law, whether it be state legislation or federal legislation, which controls commercial activities. It controls people working for the government, government agencies, and the people working for those agencies. And so it controls all of those people. But then the one out of the 50, which all 50 really is legislative law, but the 51st one is law, L-A-W with a capital L. In law, at law, all law. Any one of those three statements is the same thing. It is law, L-A-W. That's the law of God. That's the laws of nature and of nature's God. And that's what you will find in Black's Law Dictionary. That's what you will find in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Now, they try to change those things as time goes on. There's something, I think, Black's Law 10th edition or something, and I've seen changes in that. You know, it takes a long time to change things. But they make changes because they're trying to destroy everything they can, get rid of any evidence they can, anything that will empower the people, anything that will put God in power. They will do everything they can to do away with that, to stop that, to hide it, to destroy it, to obliterate it. Okay, so 51 jurisdictions. All of those are civil, 50 are civil law, you know, laws that are legislative law, and one law, the law of God. And those, and the law that we have is a natural law republic that we have, which is a natural law law, which means that everything in our Constitution is governed by the rules of common law.
So now, does that mean that, like, something in, hold that thought, please. Does that mean that something in commerce cannot have a jury trial? Only the common man and woman can have jury trials?
If there's something in commerce that the trial brings to a criminal act, then it has to be into a common law court. Now, the common law court has to apply the agreements, the contract that they made in operating. If it's, let's say it's commercial activity, and whatever the commercial activity is, you got involved with that, well, you've agreed at that point, you're agreeing, unless first, nisi prius is the statement, nisi prius, unless first, you have made an agreement to be under that law, otherwise you're not under that law. I've never made an agreement to be under any legislative law, neither of you or anybody else that is born free. We've never made agreements to be under legislative law, unless we decide one day, well, I'm going to get involved in some commercial activity, whether it be interstate or just within a state, okay? And so I will fall under, I'm agreeing to the rules, regulations, and statutes that control that commercial activity that the legislators of this state has written in order to control and to secure the safety of the people. Okay, and also to prevent, they're supposed to be preventing, different things, lots of different things. But in any event, same thing on a federal level. Okay, that's interstate. Anything, any commercial activity that's going from state to state to state, interstates. So that's what that. Now those are jurisdictions. Now in our legislative law, we have 56 jurisdictions. Okay. I think it's 56, if I remember. Hang on, let me take a quick look. 57. We have 57 jurisdictions. Actually, it's 56 because one is blanked out. Matter of fact, they also, the laws governing the Department of Education's going to be blanked out if it isn't already because Trump abolished it. So there'll be 55. Okay, there'll be
so that's
blanked.
Not the 51, though, out of the 50,
no,
right?
This is the legislation that we've empowered them to do. Okay, and I'll give you the, for instance, you have Title II controls Congress. Those statutes and regulations control Congress in USC II. Okay, USC III it controls the president. Okay, USC VII controls agriculture. USC Title X controls the armed forces. I'm skipping a lot, obviously. USC 14 controls the Coast Guard. USC 20 has been abolished. That controls the Department of Education. That's abolished because it doesn't exist no more. USC 21 controls food and drugs. USC 29 controls labor. USC 32 controls National Guard. 34, the Navy. Okay. 37, uniform services. 39, postal services. 41, public contracts. 45, railroads. You see, altogether there are 57 with two blanks. Two of them are blanks, but 57 of them, we've authorized them to write legislation to control those things. We want them to control those. But when they abuse that power and write something that shouldn't be, and it comes before us in a court, and we don't like it, we nullify it.
Okay, so so jurisdiction is it's an atmosphere that you can, if I'm in the right jurisdiction, I can move about and take care of what I need to do.
The only jurisdiction you have to worry about, if you're not involved in commercial activity and you're not working for any government agency, the only jurisdiction that you have to be concerned with is the jurisdiction of natural law, period. Nothing else can be applied to you because it's outside of their jurisdiction to apply it. They don't have the power or the authority to apply it upon us to control our behavior. We never gave them that power. Nor should we ever give them the power to control our behavior, but we gave them the power to control different great groups in the federal level. If each one of these is a jurisdiction, the jurisdiction of what controls the president. Now, you have on the state level, you have the traffic code, which is a commercial codes, okay, that falls under, has nothing to do with us, okay? They fleece us all day long on things that have nothing to do with us. Okay, I'm not operating anything in commercial activity when I'm operating my vehicle on a road. I'm just moving from one place to another. I'm traveling. That's all I'm doing. I'm not making money. If I'm driving a cab, now I'm making money. Now I have to fall under their regulations that they've applied, that we the people want them to apply. We want those people under control. We don't want them speeding. We don't want them to do certain things or whatever the case. We want them to require certain knowledge to do whatever it is that they're doing, maybe truckers or taxi cab drivers or whatever the case may be. I don't know. We want them to control that. We gave them the power to control that. But we never gave them the power, total power, that we can't nullify it. If we get end up those people in a criminal action, and they're underneath those different jurisdictions that they have to be obedient to, and we discover that we didn't like that particular statute that's being applied upon that person, we just say no go, nullified. Don't bring it up no more. We're not talking.
The very first question that was brought up, that was read earlier tonight, involved someone who has some property, and there was some, I guess it was kind of an ugly, they let things go, there was a broken car or something, and they got brought into a court, and then you were saying that I might have misheard you, but I believe you said that you could tell, you know, it's not the jurisdiction that they should be in, you're not getting due process.
I had a car that was parked in my driveway without tags on it for quite some time. And they tried to make me go get tags and put insurance on it because whatever it is that they're talking about. I really don't care what they're talking about. That's what they wanted me to do. Okay, but I don't have the money to put out to put another car on the road and it needed work, so this, why put insurance and tags on it, you know? But the town wanted me to do that. I went out and bought a car cover for that car, throw it over that, end of the story. They can't come and lift that up. They don't know what's going on underneath that. It's none of their business. Or it could be in my garage, but my garage is full of tools because I'm an ex-contractor, so I have so many tools.
Okay.
You know? But,
okay,
I'll
just keep looking at it. I know that due process is where I belong, and...
Due process is really going through the process of a court of justice. That's due process. You can't apply a statute on me. You can't apply a regulation on me. You can't apply anything on me, okay? If government thinks I broke the law or did something wrong, they need to go talk to the people about that. And the people need to be, you know, educated therein. The people expect to be ignorant and free. They expect what never was and never will be. So we have to orientate even every one of these juries to properly understand their powers and authorities that they have. And that you know, that's why we're building jury administrators throughout the counties. But anyway, the way it's supposed to work is if the government wants to come out after me for something and they don't like what I'm doing or they don't like to see my car there, well, they need to go and they think it's something that has to be done, that car has to something or whatever. I don't know what they're thinking, but they need to go get permission from the people. And if the people are well-informed and educated in the law, which is, let me repeat it, common law, natural law, which is just simply common sense with an eye on justice. That's all it is. It doesn't get any more complex than that. Thomas Jefferson spoke about it as being plain language. Okay? So now they have to go get the people and ask the jury for permission to make some application against me for something. And the jury, if they're properly educated, is going to say, take a hike. We're not even going to listen to you. Go away. Because you can't make laws to control the behavior of the people. That's God's job. And that works in my heart. That's my job to work that out with God. Now,
so
again,
I'm sorry.
So if I injure somebody, it's a whole new story. You know, Now something's going to have to apply. I can't injure another person. Accident is one thing, but, you know, to...
So one of the functions of the Committee of Safety is that people could go to the Committee of Safety and talk to them about this, right? Isn't that something that... It's like a... Yeah.
The people of the people within the townships within the county, whether it's the cities or the towns or the villages or whatever, and they have a problem with the government, they can come to the Committee of Safety, and the Committee of Safety will solve that problem. And what's going to happen when people come and start making, they realize that the Committee of Safety there and start making complaints and you share literature with them, and what are they going to do? They're going to say, maybe I should join this Committee of Safety.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody should find time to join the Committee of Safety and give the Committee of Safety, you know, you come to a meeting once a month, two hours maybe, you know, you start at, you come in at 7:30 and you finish at 9:30, you know, your 2 hours of work. Now, throughout the month, okay, you might have two or three things you have to work on and bring it back to the committee and give your conclusions of whatever that might be. You might be working with a small committee of three or four or five people or whatever, working on something, and you spend a couple hours together and you put it all together and you bring it before the whole committee on a committee meeting. So you might have to work 5 hours a month, okay? And if that's too much work for you to have liberty, then...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. And I'm really congratulations on your book. That must be very fulfilling. I'm really happy for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. It's late. I need to go to sleep. I'm totally exhausted. I didn't sleep much last night. I usually stay a little longer, 15 after. I'm going to close down. Sorry, Jeff and wireless caller. We'll catch you next week, hopefully. All right, with that, we're ending for the night. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.
Good night.